So I don't want to go too fast. And what I actually have on the board over here is actually next week's lesson. So is that a teaser? Yes, it is. Well, the whole idea that the Jews are cut off, that is the whole series we have. Romans 9, 10, 11 talks about them being cut off, the Gentiles grafted in, but the real branch will be grafted in again. So I'm trying to show that they are cut off, and I'm saying today they're cut off, they're loose, and I didn't have an animated board to do this. The words have not given me an animated board yet either. I don't know what that would look like, but it would be nice to be able to move that trunk to the left of center, and then we're going to have to plant a few because they're not all moving the same direction. So they move to the left generally. So I have three stages, but this is not today's lesson. This is next week's lesson, let you know that. So the first group to the left would be the religious Jews with the black hats, the Hasidic Jews. They're religious Jews, the practice Jews. They are kosher Jews. You know, they're not anything except Jewish, and they're promoting their Jewishness through the Torah, and you know, just stickers on every little point, and you don't mess with them. They're just, you know, they run the country, even though they're only 10% of the country. They run the place. They're conservative Jews, all right? Well, then you get the next group over, which would be represented by those in Hollywood that we know as Jewish leaders, playwrights, directors, all the famous people. Many of the famous people you know in Hollywood are Jewish people, so now we have secular Jews. They don't care about the black hats. In fact, they dislike them. And the black hats don't like the secular Jews because they're not really religious Jews, you know, so they're kind of becoming a drain to the Judaism. So we have a large group in the secular Jewish category. And some of those secular Jews may go to synagogue. We have a couple of synagogues in Lincoln I mentioned that would fit to that largely. And if you observe, most Jews, no matter how religious or how secular are, you probably observe some form of a Passover in your home. And so you have that group, and then you have the radical Jews. And the radical Jews is the ones that produced the revolutionary Jews. And here you have the Jews that we think about in Russia. Many of those Jews, I think the five top communist leaders in Russia at the time of Lenin were Jewish people. And we have people like Karl Marx or Sigmund Freud and others that we can name. If we would have time to stop and name all of them, it would be a long time. But they're really radicals, they're revolutionaries. And you wonder, why in the world do they do that? So my point of putting that up here this morning is that there can be resentment against this radicalism, the radical Jews, and it doesn't necessarily have to be anti-Semitism. Now, some have accused us of saying, well, we support the Jews, so therefore the Jews can do no wrong. I said, no, wait a minute, I never said that. The Jews do wrong, and I don't support them when they do wrong. You know, that's different than anti-Semitism. So they're doing wrong here because we would be against communism, for example. And so we would not be against Trotsky just because he's Jewish. No, because he's communist. So we ought to be able to make that distinction without having the charge of anti-Semitism charged against us. So what you are as a person is one thing, but what you do might be another thing, and what you do is the resentment part, and that's where resentment comes in, and doesn't have to be anti-Semitism. And that's why I'm doing this. Our lessons are to help us manage your attitude towards the Jews. I don't want you to think that you can never have a bad thought about a Jew, that he's ever done something wrong. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying that Jews have their place, and God's using them, and the things about them that God is doing that you can't deny. And there's some really bad ones in the group. Most of the whatever. So that's kind of where we're going to go because our the world's attitude towards a Jew has to be somewhat parsed. You just can't say it's all the same. And so we have people that could be against the religious Jews. Well, I just don't think they should be wearing their black hats. I just think they look so stupid. And they have all these funny ones, and they look all different, and they all, you know, they're Jews. You know, that's not good. That's not good. And the next secular Jew, you almost got to be careful with there. You say, well, they do all these, you know, they're taking our culture in the wrong way. They're, you know, making, movies that are not supporting good Christian values or even Jewish values, and so they're taking our country down. You can have that kind of attitude about those people, but they're still Jews. And so I look at them, someone as poor lost sheep, you know. And then we get to the radicals, and then we have those that do really things that damage Lot. We talked about Soros. Chomsky is another one out there that's a Jewish guy that's done a lot of damage in culture. And so, you know, we don't have to love those guys for what they do. We have to just recognize who they are. And we go back to that they're rootless. That's why they're doing this. They're rootless. They don't have a connection. And if they don't have a connection, they're resentful of the connection they should have had. They know that that does exist in the Bible, in the Torah. They know that, and they resent that. So in order somewhat to distance themselves from that, they become radicals. You know, they kind of make their own world because they rejected the world of God. So that's another question. And there's a lot of interesting stuff. If you're interested in reading this further, they are this reason for anti-Semitism, Why the Jews, by Dennis Prager. And the other guy, I don't know who he is. Why the Jews? I think we probably have it at Sound Words. And so I'm using a lot of this material because Dennis Prager is a solid, conservative, middle of the road. He talks about stuff objectively, and he's Jewish, so got to be careful. Not careful. You know, he says some things. I wouldn't say it that way exactly, but generally he's very, very helpful because he's an insider talking about their family. And so he talked about these radicals and who they are and why they're radical. So that's next week's lesson. Maybe the week after that. I don't know when. See, what I have my list to do, which I wanted to do today, is why the Jews are hated. There's a list. You can go down the list. One of these that they believe in one God. No, not just one God. No, one God at the exclusion of all the others. Oh, now we're in trouble, all right? So that is one reason they're hated. Well, that's why we're hated too. You know, Christians have the same theology. But we get confused about what one God is or who that one God is. So today we want to talk about the nations, particularly one kind of nations. Why do the nations hate the Jews? And not all of them, because somehow you get into China and Japan and the Far East. I don't know that they got anti-Semitism. Maybe they do. I don't know. You never hear about it. They're not in the loop as far as we're concerned. We're in the West. So we know about the West, how they have dealt with the Jews. So that's probably where our focus is going to be. So when I say why the nations hate the Jews, we're going to probably have to think more or less the Middle East and to the West, those nations, geographically those nations. I'm not going to go through the beginning of this, which you know already. There aren't any visitors here this morning. The Bible's contract. Have you heard that before? No, see, I told you to miss a thing. And we've had now 4,000 years, and we decided to take it literally, the Bible. Let's just try that. How's it worked out? We've had 4,000 years now testing to see how it worked out. Were we on the wrong track, thinking it literally? It says, no, we're on the right track. So that's what this is supposed to be. Now we're talking about the land, seed and blessing. But no, not really the seed. We're talking about the seed at the bottom where it says that in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That's what that appendix is what we're working on, not the middle main seed. That's Jesus Christ. We'll do that. See, that's another whole series of things we got to do. Yeah, this ended up being a long day, all day sucker. Okay. Now we know about this, but just again, get everybody up to speed. You know, we've been thinking about football and stuff. Now get your head back in the Bible. All right. A noble people. These are the Jews. At least 178 Jews have been awarded the Nobel Prize, accounted for 23% of the individual recipients worldwide between 1909 and 2008. Constituting 37% of all U.S. recipients during that period. The achievement of the Jews. This is just not the same thing, but just kind of repeat. In the scientific research fields of chemistry, economics, medicine, and physics, the corresponding world and United States percentages are 27% and 40% respectively. Big numbers. Jews currently make up for 0.25% of the world's population, 2% of the U.S. population, and see where they're up there, 27%, 23%, 37%, 27%, 40%. A lot of big numbers, way overrepresented. So for the Christians, from our point of view, the Christians, they're a blessed seeds for in every respect as a group through Abraham and through Christ, of course, which we haven't dealt with that yet. But in every respect, Paul says, they're a blessing to us. First of all, they were entrusted with the oracles of God. As I said, they're the link between God and man. Huge thing. If that link is missing, we're dead. We're lost. And we pick up this link from the end of Shem, which I think is Melchizedek, and that brings the information forward. The Shem line dies after Abraham comes on the scene. We have made the conjecture that the baton of the records were passed from Abraham at the spring of Rogel, which is the bottom of the Kidron Valley, where the Gehenna Valley and the Gihon match, the bottom of Jerusalem. That's where that had their meeting. It says so in the Bible, so the Valley of the Kings, that's what it is. Bottom of the Kidron Valley in Jerusalem around 2000 BC, that's where this baton was passed, I think. At least there was the opportunity. If it wasn't passed, they sure missed an opportunity. Now, the argument, this is from Jim Ekman. Some of you know him from Grace College of the Bible. I don't know if he's still living or not. I don't know what age he is, but this is from him. I edited it a little bit. The argument Paul is clearly making in all of Romans 9 and 11 is that the Gentiles should be thankful to God for the Jewish people because blessing has come through them, most importantly, of course, through the Lord Jesus. And because God's grace, Gentiles by faith are grafted into the olive tree of blessing. I don't have that on there, but that would be it there now. They would be grafted in. God's covenant blessing, very important. God is not finished with the Jewish people yet. And that's what I put on the bottom there, sons of promise yet. Now his plan, his redemptive purposes for them will be accomplished because we're taking the Bible literally, and that's what it says. What is occurring in the Middle East today is supernatural. He wrote this quite a few years ago, and it still is. God is making Israel a blessing to the nation in the meantime, and you don't have to go very far to find that to be true, and we have talked about that. The motivation of Jewish salvation, they said this about themselves, is just to make the world a better place. That's the gospel for them. Make the world a better place. We saw last week that humanitarian aid they promote heavily as Israel is at the top of the list for modern Israel. They talk a lot about where they go. Not talked about much in the press that Israel was here and, you know, these calamities, and they go with their medical teams and the recovery efforts, and they do a lot of work in these disaster areas where they need some relief. And so that's kind of fits their idea that salvation is found to make the world a better place and to help people along the way. That's sort of empty for us, perhaps. So we saw last week that humanitarian aid is the top of the list for modern Israel. This is, it seems, based on the false idea of Christian modernism. And we've talked on Wednesday night about this, that Christianity has assumed a responsibility that never was in the New Testament, but somewhere around the 18th century, 19th century, the modernists started thinking that Christians ought to be feeding the people outside the church, taking care of them, the poor, the oppressed, based on Matthew 5, the Sermon on the Mount says, the blessed are the poor. And since the poor are blessed, we need to help them. And if we help them, then we are blessed. So that all came not out of the Bible, it came out of modernism. So now the Jews have picked up on that, and the Jewish law doesn't teach it at all. It's kind of like thinking about, would you think that the early church should have helped the Romans, the Roman neighbor who were, you know, in trouble? Well, they never thought of it. It wouldn't have come to their mind. It never came to anybody's mind until you get to the point where the gospel was abandoned and the social gospel was being accepted. And that's what we're talking about here. So charity to the outside is a Christian modernist ideal, you know, and we have to fight that even in our own thinking. Well, those people out there, they need our help. Where do you get that idea from? You don't get it from the Bible. The Bible says take care of your own. It doesn't say about take care of the world, because we don't have the money to take care of the world. So when anybody that starts doing it, you know, they got it from these moralists, the modernists in the 18th century, and the Jews that picked up on it. So charity to the outside is a Christian modernist ideal. But leave that as it is, there are scores of contributions the Jews have made to the temporal betterment of the human condition. And they have said that, and that's their intention. So with all this great help we get from the Jews, why this Jewish hate when they have done so much? And that's really the age question here. Well, usually this is how we do it, and I'm not sure it's wrong. I'm going to explain it how I think it might work today for you. The prophecy of Ishmael's sons, given to Hagar, the Lord said to her that Ishmael will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he will live to the east of his brothers. All right, that phrase, that he will be against everyone and everyone's hand will be against him, we have capitalized on or wondered about. Well, is it the Ishmaelites that are going to be the opposers of Israel? Well, we may think that the descendants of Ishmael are the nemesis of the Jews today. While this is partly true, don't really know here, certainly hard to prove, yet it's hard to exclude them on the other hand. So we have to leave something of truth here that may be something we should look at. Because the opposition to the Jews is much wider than the small lost half-brother tribe living in Western Arabia. We don't even know who they are, frankly. We don't even know who these Ishmaelites are. During Moses' time, they knew who they were because there were some Ishmaelites he met. During Joseph's time, he was taken captive by an Ishmaelite and sold into Egypt. But by the time we get to our age, we'd lost track. So the prophecy made to Hagar, that's the mother of Ishmael. So the prophet made, son of Abraham, you know the story. The prophecy made to Hagar is that his hand will be against everyone, everyone's hand against him. This obviously is broader than in conflict with the half-brother Jews. It says everyone. It says everyone. It doesn't say his half-brother. It doesn't say about Jacob. It doesn't say that. Or Isaac, who the comparison would be. This obviously is broader than a conflict with the half-brother Jews, since nothing is said about it in the prophecy directly. So here it is. Here's the whole text. He'll be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone. Everyone's hand will be against him. He will live to the east of his brother. That's all it says. No word there about the Jews at all. So how do we deal with this? Opposition from Ishmael. So it seems. So it seems. No connection, but so it seems. Perhaps the best way to look at the Islamic conflict is that it is likely originated from the Ishmaelites. Now, Ishmaelite, not the only enemy of the Jews, but the Ishmaelites are the seed people for an enlarged spiritual, physical army of the enemy, or as the enemy. Now, the vehicle to carry this opposition is not by the common blood or as brothers, not the Ishmaelites as such, by the Islamic religion created by the Ishmaelites. Muhammad claimed to be an Ishmaelite, and he was in Western Saudi Arabia. So he comes from the right place. I don't know, frankly, whether he's right or not about this being Ishmaelite. Was he an opportunist? And says, if I can claim to be a son of Abraham, a descendant of Abraham through Ishmael, then I've got a leg up on her argument here. So he may legitimately have it. I'm saying if he legitimately have it, that's fine. If he doesn't have it legitimately, then we're sort of building out a case that's really doesn't have any foundation. So maybe being a gentleman, I'm going to let him have his way and so assume then that he is an Ishmaelite. Because he acts like as if he's one. I mean, he wants to be one, so he's going to act like one. So to carry this opposition now is not by the Blood Brothers, which is a small group, but by the Islamic religion invented by Muhammad. Now, I call this a trick. The devil does things underhandedly. This is a trick which allowed the people of the oppression to grow exponentially. People of the oppression are the ones that oppose the Jews. This trick has allowed the people of the opposition, that's we call the Arabs today, to grow exponentially, not at a slow birth rate. You know, it takes slow, you know, 9 months, then you only have one, sometimes twins, two. But if you go in with a philosophy and change the whole culture, you can do that in a generation. So, but with a life-threatening religion, which is what Muhammad created, anyone, regardless of bloodline, could be a Muslim instantly. Thus, the explosion of Islam. Now, this one thing you don't probably realize unless you're a history person. In 100 years, the Islamic opposition to the Jews and the Christians became worldwide, Western worldwide, at least from the Middle East. In 100 years, three generations, the end of its Western expansion was in 740. Muhammad died in 634. 740 is 106 years later. The Muslims were stopped in Spain by Pepin. They didn't go any further into Western Europe than that part, middle of Spain. 100 years from Saudi Arabia, I have a map here. Yeah, There you go. That green area and more, in fact, it was up in Europe, which I don't have the height of the Muslim conquest, but all the Mediterranean, you think about the northern shore of the Mediterranean, all those countries clear to half of Spain was all Muslim. Turkey, is Turkey in here? Turkey's not even in here. That's all would have been Muslim. So, I'm flabbergasted that how fast that religion grew. You know, I said, well, yeah, they said Muslim or die. I guess that helped speed it along a little bit, but that they can enforce it. So they had their different ways of doing it. So, well, you don't have to be full Muslim, you can be part Muslim. All you got to just pay tax. Oh, okay, then I'll be a Muslim. So in some sense, it was an easy way to adopt this other religion without it costing you too much. But they did do it. So I'm not going to, so that's where the Muslims were. And they overran in 100 years, in a sense, the Western world. We discuss Islam first, but the greatest enemy of the Jews has not been the Muslims, but the anti-Semitic church. Now, this is what we don't want to talk about as Christians. I mean, I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it every day because it's such a mistake. It's such a blunder. This is the great embarrassment to the biblically minded Christians. That's us. To me, I'm embarrassed by it. I go to my Jewish friends. There are a few I have. And I'm thinking about that. In fact, I did that one time to our early guide was Yosef. Remember? Some of you were on that trip. And I took 10 minutes and apologized to the Jewish people for what the Christians have done to the Jews. You know, I thought that he'd say, wow, thanks, Don. That was nice. You know, Yosef was sitting on the side there. I think he's dreaming about something else. But I said what I wanted to say, and I recorded it someplace. I've got it. And I felt a lot better after that because I just feel there had to be something said that this is not representing us. We don't think of you that way. All right, so we have this anti-Semitic church. It's a great embarrassment of biblical thinking people. I hope that's you. Christian replacement of the Jews is the fountainhead of Jewish opposition, not the Islamic faith. Now think about this. The Christians, I've been over this so many times, I hope you can do this. If you're bored of this, then tell it to me, you know, verbatim. But we don't remember this. That's why I go over this. The Christians assume the Jewish blessedness. It's not the Jews, it's ours. For 500 years before Muhammad ever showed up, the idea of replacement theology lives strong in the heart of a Christian. The Jews are out, the Christians are in. On the scene shows up Muhammad, 600, died 634, so give him whatever years he lived. So somewhere in the middle of late part of 500 AD, Muhammad shows up. And he thinks around, a smart guy. Not too much to reach for Muhammad. When he looks around and says, if the church was successful in superseding the Jewish faith, and he could see that, they were claiming, why then could he not claim that the last religion, which is Islam, which is what he does claim, why then could he not claim that the last religion, Islam, also superseded the Jewish faith and, in the process, also the Christian faith? And that's his argument. Now, it's kind of hard to argue against that, isn't it? If the Christians can do it to the Jews, why can't some other Gentile come along and do it to the Jews and Christians? After all, he is the last prophet. That's pretty hard to defend if the Christians did it. Therefore, we see in Islam a mixture of Old Testament, New Testament truth mixed with a final touch of his own ideas to make it all his own. So, rather than love, they hate. Now, this is kind of where my lesson is going to end, and here's where I'd go to my second lesson, which I didn't think I'd have time to do. So I may have to depend on you for your questions. So we have, after learning the last 2 weeks about the Jewish benefit to the world, one would think that the Jews would be the most popular person in the world. Everybody would want to live next to the Jew because, remember, associations here are important. Remember, my dad didn't want to be a cobbler because of the associations with people that couldn't buy new shoes. Well, you hang around with the Jews, maybe some of that would rub off, whatever it is. So that's what's going to happen in the millennium. Says the millennium passage, Zechariah 8:23 says, thus said Lord of hosts, In those days, 10 Gentiles from all the nations will grasp the garment of a Jew, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. That's not happening today. Now, I'd say you go to a Jew today, so I don't have any idea either. But what I say, what does a attracts to Jew do for us? It ought to direct us to the Scripture. And in the Scriptures, you're found that you are directed towards God. And that's still how the Jews function even today. So that's as far as I'm going to go. And that was 21 panels. The next one is going to be 20. I could have probably finished it. I don't know. I'm going to give you a little chance to talk. The real answer I have not gotten to yet. There are four reasons, but one of them is because they're monotheistic. But we have the why here is more or less the reaction of the Muslims nations, and there are 30 of them. Why do the Muslims hate the Jews? It's kind of what I'm saying up there. Well, because they started religion that was built on the idea that you could supersede other religions. So they superseded the Christians, they superseded the Jews. Now we got a new religion. Now I got a religion in which I can use to attack the Jews. That's why they do it. They say the Jews are inappropriate, or have no authority. They've been set aside. The Muslims, Islam now is the religion of choice. And so with that, they attack the Jews because they're the old guys. You know, we're the new guys. Right. Until, you know what the next answer is? Until the Jews wouldn't follow the Muslims. So Muhammad's idea was that this is going to be an easy shoe-in. I mean, here I am. Talk about hubris, or what do you call this? Ego. I'm the guy that showed up, and I've got sense the Messiah, not use that word, but I am the savior of all religion. Who doesn't ever think that? That's got big, grandiose ideas about themselves. And he says, look, the Jews have been put away by the Christians, and I can put the Christians away on the same basis that they put the Jews away. So I'm going to put them all away, and they're going to see this, and they're going to come to me and say, look, wow, here it is, a unifier of all the nations and all the religions of the world. Follow me.
The religion.
The religion, that's right. He was going to be there. They still think that. And so, well, at first, and you know, remember, these things don't happen all at one time and all at one place. So in time, the Jews started to figure out, oh, I see, he wants us to abandon our monotheistic God, and as it will turn out, and they want us to accept the writings of Muhammad as being divine. That goes against our monotheistic idea of the Jewish God. Now we have a second deity in the divine literature. That's why they rejected Christianity, because of the Trinity. Now they want to reject Islam because of its divine authority in the writings, the Quran. And the Jews say, no, we can't go there. We can't go there. Now I'm pressing history together here. Because at first it was that the Jews, he was hoping, and he went out, probably evangelized them to be part of Islam, but they wouldn't come with him, and then he turned on them. That's when he started killing them. That's why you see in the Quran, you see friendliness and you see hostility in the same book. And so it depends on what program you want to promote as to what part of the Quran you quote. That's kind of today's Muslim. Yeah, and one more thing, we don't forget, this is one of those contributions by Rodney Stark in Why the West Was Victorious, is that the Muslims do not innovate. Do not innovate, so they rode their horses on bareback. They wouldn't use saddles. They wouldn't use stirrups. And that's why they lost in the middle of Spain when Pepin attacked, because they wouldn't innovate, didn't have saddles. So the Western armies beat the Muslims in Spain. That's what stopped them. The Jews and Islam got along a lot better than Islam and the Christians did. We don't see it that well, though. You know, what is the big Satan in terms of Al-Qaeda and those guys? The big Satan? The United States. Not the Jews. That's today. They would use that word today. They have more than one way of doing it. And, the way this goes, if they can overwhelm you with numbers or by peaceful means, they will. And if they can, by the sword, they will. So it depends on what the numbers would be, and they can't do it with sword unless they have a lot of numbers. So they build the group up before they, you know, use the sword. Now, all this ain't going to happen. Right, they're going to get wiped out when they attack Israel. And that's what I'm watching, you know, because I think it's going to happen after the rapture, but before the tribulation. So that little window of time in there is when they'll do this, and the scenario really works out really nicely, because all the opposition of Jews have been destroyed. At that point, Antichrist will have no reason at all why they wouldn't guarantee Israel's sovereignty. You know, Russia's been destroyed, and Islamic armies have been destroyed. Israel has no formidable foe anymore, so the Antichrist comes in to unify the world, takes them under his wing. Of course, it's a deception. So I'm watching that, because if the rapture occurs today, let's say, well, then this army, this battle is going to happen really relatively soon. No matter what position you have, where it is, in the middle of the tribulation, it still would be pretty soon. Yeah. And it does it by usurping. I was trying to find that idea in the scripture quickly this morning. I didn't chase it down. There it is. It is there, but I couldn't find it. But he comes in to take over something that exists. And, yeah, it's usurping. Yeah, we know that the real underlying cause of this is the animosity is towards God. And we're just trying to dig down and show a little bit how does that develop, and this idea that God, that they are a monotheistic God, and that means that other gods don't exist. That's a Jewish mentality. In fact, they're so strong in this, that's how the Christians get ruled out, because they see us being a multi-God religion, because we have Trinity. And it's, and the Shema says, you know, hear, O God, hear, O Israel, the Lord is one. Deuteronomy is, 6:4? I think that's what it is. And so since that is their the anchor on that, then we come along with the Christian God and make Jesus Christ deity, then all of a sudden we have two gods, and that's how they see it. Obviously, explaining the Trinity is a little difficult, impossible, but you have to accept it, and they don't. And they didn't, like I said, they didn't like the Muslim, because they got into a, they ran to the Shema too, because the Muslim said the writings, as it worked out, was from God. And that would mean there was two gods. We have the writing, and then we have the Torah, the Quran and the Torah. You can't have two gods. There's only one. That's the one that wrote the Torah. So.
To destroy the United States.
Yeah, I would think that's it's an opposition to what God said works, and that said eat your own bread. And they said, socialism says, no, eat everybody else's bread.
I knew that.
See, that's the whole lesson we'll do with the radicals. The whole, you need to do it. I mean, what we need to do is have an attitude right about the Jews, and that doesn't mean that we say everything they do is good. Cannot do that. But they are the Jews, and they're in the lane for God's promise. And for that, we have to support them in that future if we can't support them in their action today. Let's pray.